Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Unstoppable Stories Show with Terrence Leftridge, where we talk to ordinary people with unstoppable stories. Now here's your host, Life Accountability Coach, Terrence Leftridge.
Hey, 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 it is an unstoppable day. How you doing out there in Blog Talk Radio land, or if you are joining us live on Facebook Live? This is the Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Leftridge, where we talk to ordinary people with unstoppable stories. Well, it's another Tuesday night, so you know it's the Unstoppable Story Show. And we know that you could be anywhere in the world on this Tuesday night. And so we are just glad that you decided to spend a little bit of time with us on the Unstoppable Story Show. As I said, I am Terrence, the Unstoppable Coach Leftridge with Unstoppable Coaching Services, where we help you create your vision, implement your vision, and more importantly, hold you accountable to making your vision a reality. So glad that you're here. We are in April. It is the first week of April, and it is by chance my birthday week as well. So I am definitely celebrating this first week of April, and hopefully you're doing something this week to celebrate your great, great, great new month of April. Spring has sprung. We're about to change the seasons. Everything is in bloom. But then also, we are also celebrating and bringing awareness to autism awareness. That's what's happening in the month of April. Autism spectrum disorder. We talk about that a lot, but it really doesn't get the kind of response or the kind of notoriety that we want to give it this evening. Because many times you hear about autism, and autism comes from the female point of view. You hear it from stars like Toni Braxton, like Holly Robinson-Pete, like Jenny McCarthy, but you really don't know that behind every one of them, there is a Rodney Pete. There is a Carrie Lewis. There is a John Mallory Asher, who is the father of Jenny McCarthy's child who suffers from autism. You really don't hear about autism from a dad's point of view. For whatever reason that is, men tend to suffer in silence, and especially when you're talking about this type of disorder. So tonight we're going to have real talk about autism from a dad's point of view. And we've assembled some dynamic autism dads here from the Chicagoland Autism Connection, CAC. They had a great event that I was humbled and pleased to facilitate this past weekend called Spring Fling here in Chicago. And these dads took the stage and they really warmed our heart with their ability to be frank, with their ability to be transparent, and with their ability to give us real talk about what's happening in the world of autism. I call them the dynamic autism dads, but they go by the name of Carlos Payne, Paul Butler, Joe Jackson, Danny Randall, and Carrie Brooks. They are the dynamic autism dads, and we're going to have them come in and share some more real talk about autism this evening. So go ahead and grab your favorite beverage. You might want to grab a pen and paper if you want to get more information about autism and how you can help advocate, how you can help assist, how you can help promote what's going on in the autism community as well. So I got to say from the very beginning that I am not a father of a child with autism, but I was brought into the autism community by my friend, Danny Randall, who's one of our guests this evening. He came up to me about 2 years ago And he had this ideal that he wanted to tell his story. He wanted to talk about his son, Daniel III. Daniel is an amazing young man, and I'm going to let Danny tell more of that story. But he wanted to talk to men because he felt, like I do, that men, no matter what it is, we tend to keep our voice silent. We're not out in front as much as we need to be. And he wanted to get out in front of it to give a voice to autism from a male perspective. And then he introduced me to these other four gentlemen that's going to be on the show tonight, all in the fight for autism advocacy. And I swear I learn something new each and every day, as I'm sure you will this evening as we listen to these gentlemen. So without further ado, we are going to open up some mics and we are going to let you, the Unstoppable Story audience, listen to these great dynamic autism dads for yourself. And if you want to join the conversation, well, you know what you need to do. Just go ahead and dial in to area code 323-870-3764. That's 323-870-3764. So we're introducing to the mic Carlos Payne, Paul Butler, Danny Randall, Kerry Brooks. You guys, are you guys on the call right now?
Yes, yeah. I am, Danny. Yep. Carlos.
Hey, welcome you guys. Welcome all of you to the Unstoppable Story Show. If you guys are looking at us live on Facebook, you see those handsome gentlemen in the background. I am checking to see if Joe has joined the call, and I don't see his number yet, so we'll just hopefully he'll get in soon. But thank you guys for taking a little bit of your time to join us on the Unstoppable Story Show. I think you're just going to bless us this evening with a whole bunch of information as we continue to deal with Autism Awareness Month here in Chicago and across the country. So let's start with the elder statement of the show. Let's start with Paul Butler. Paul, why don't you give us a little bit of information about yourself and your son and why autism awareness is so important to you?
Okay, I will do that, Terrence. My son is named Shakir. He's 24 years old, having been born in 1992. And let me preface by saying that I'm a retired Chicago Public Schools educator, and I have an advanced degree in special education. In 1995, when Shakir was diagnosed with autism, very little was known about autism, and that made it very, very difficult for my wife and I to determine just what we should do. Oftentimes, doctors didn't know how to proceed. Teachers certainly didn't know much about it. And so we were constantly on the hunt for information. Getting the diagnosis was quite a task. First of all, we look for other things besides autism. We thought that the reason he did not respond to people trying to interact with him was possibly because he just wasn't interested, or perhaps he had a hearing problem, or perhaps he was just like his dad, myself, who was not that interested in social interaction himself.
Wow.
But after 3 years, you know, the pediatrician said to us, you know, I think you need to go see a specialist, which we did. And at that particular time, he was diagnosed with what was called PDD-NOS. And what that meant was that was the beginning of the diagnosis of of autism.
And you said that was PPD NOS?
PPD NOS. Pervasive Development Disorder.
Okay.
That's the precursor of autism.
Okay. Now, how old is Shakir now?
Shakir is 24 years old now.
Okay.
And
right.
It's been a very long process to get him to where he is. I'd be happy to discuss that. But before I do that, I'm sure others would like to indicate just how they came about getting the diagnosis for their child.
Yes, yes, indeed. And thank you so much, Paul, for sharing that little bit. We are definitely going to come back because with Shakir being 24, I believe he is the oldest child on the panel. So you definitely have some insight that our audience who has older children who are dealing with autism would definitely need to hear. So thank you so much for that. I want to switch and go to Carlos Payne. Carlos, how about you tell us your story?
Well, my name is Carlos. My son is Jalen. He's 12 right now. And when he was born, you know, on time, no complications. We took him to, you know, you do his 0 to 3 evaluation. He was fine, but around 2, he wasn't saying, he didn't have the language we wanted. I wasn't really speaking as much. So we had a speech pathologist and stuff, and then she said I could get him to have enough words to accomplish it during our summer. So we was kind of fine. But once he got into maybe first grade or so, my wife started thinking, like, he's starting to look funny, his face. You know, once you look at different pictures we took over the years, he started to change. And then one teacher thought, because one teacher thought maybe it was, because he didn't really do no talking in school, but he had talked to individuals, so they thought it was maybe, you know, selective mutation. You know, that's someone have kids have anxiety, and they just speak to certain teachers. Because some teachers say, oh, no, he speaks to me. But another teacher say, he does say no words. So then I think we were like 9. So we almost waited real late. This kind of kept saying he just kind of developing slow. Maybe it's just, you know, LD, learning disability. So about 9 years old, when we got him tested again, then they said, well, he's on the spectrum. Autism. And then that was a shock for me. Like I said before, it's just that when you're a male father, it's a little different. When you have a son, you want to be like you. You want to play games and play football. You know, that father-son relationship that I really don't have with him. He's kind of like a loner. I mean, it was times when I sit down and cry when I just couldn't understand him. On how he might express himself or just didn't understand the whole system until we hooked up with Paul and Joe and Dan, everybody from CAC, and you got to see, you know, African-American families out here that was going through the same experience. But I think what was even deeper when I got there, there was no male except Paul and Danny and Joe at the time. So I got there just females, and you kind of listen to their stories and hear how they cry while we just kind of sat there. But I think we share the same feelings from, masculine aspect. So, and I'm still learning. I mean, I still go through some things with my son. I don't know if it's just the hormones change because he's 12 years old or it's autism because I'm going through a lot of, well, I guess I say trying me. I think everybody probably went through that same situation as well. So that's my transition coming to having a son diagnosed with autism.
Well, thank you, Carlos, for being transparent and sharing your story with us this evening. We're going to come back to you because I think you have one of the you're on the other end of the spectrum as having one of the youngest children on this panel. So I want to switch. Let's go. I'm going to ask you, Carlos, to mute your phone because there's a little bit of squeaking in background. So mute your phone, and then we'll pull you back in for the conversation, okay?
Okay. All right.
All right. Can Carrie Brooks, Carrie, can you hear us?
Yes, good evening. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Life is beautiful. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
All right. Okay, I'm going to ask for the other panel, while Carrie's talking, if you can just mute your phone from where you are, your phone, because there's a little bit of background, and I don't want to mute everybody at the same time. So if you could just mute your phone. And Carrie, can you still hear us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Okay. So, Carrie, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey with autism from your point of view?
Absolutely. My son's name is Kingsley, and he was diagnosed right around 2.5, going on 3 years old. And I tell you, as a father, I can relate to what the other gentleman was saying, what Carlos is saying. You have this son. You definitely, you know, want to be able to have this father-son relationship with your son, but with any child. And so when we first started noticing different characteristic and traits in our son, he was speaking several words, and then he started to regress in his speech. He started to have this glazed look over his eyes where we would talk to him. At first we thought maybe that was a hearing problem, but we saw this glazed look over his eyes where he just wasn't really connected to us. And in addition to that, he started having some stimming. One thing that he would do would flap his hand when he became when anxiety, you know, set up on him. He would start flapping his arms, and he also started lining up all his toys and would lay on the floor and just look at them for 30 minutes, for an hour, as long as you would allow him to do that. We started having very different behavior that we weren't used to. So we followed the protocol, you know, went to some professionals, and they diagnosed him on the spectrum. And I tell you, once you get that diagnosis, it's like someone just ran up from behind you and, you know, surprised you and punched you in the stomach. It's just like a blow. It just knocked the breath out of you. That was a lot of tears that went on. And we started our journey. And it wasn't easy, but that was the start of it. Once you see certain things and you think, okay, maybe I'm not seeing what I think I see, and you start to notice a little bit more different traits and characteristics, and then you go seek professional advice and counseling, and then you have the test done and you get that diagnosis, and you're like, okay, this is real. So our thing was let's roll up our sleeves. What is it that we can do to allow our son to reach his personal, you know, best full potential? What is it that we can do as parents? And I tell individuals that when this first started, this was our greatest crisis. This was our greatest crisis. But over the years, we have come to understand that our greatest crisis have become our greatest miracle. So we are blessed to have him, because I wanted to teach him everything that I knew, but he has taught me so much more. So that's where we are right now. Today he's 16 years old, and he's a lovable young man.
And, you know, I love how you have turned it into positivity. I love that statement, greatest crisis, greatest miracle. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that at some point in the show. But, Carrie, thank you so much for being part of the show as well. We're going to switch over to Danny Randall. Danny, can you unmute yourself and come back on the call?
Hello.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
Fine. How you doing? Blessed
Good.
To be here.
Thank you so much for being on the show again. Now, Danny, you know, you are the catalyst for what we're doing right now from an Unstoppable Stories point of view, because you came to me, and I remember it like yesterday, in the parking lot of one of our local banks here. We had a conversation about your story and how you wanted to tell the world of what was happening to dads all across the world who was suffering in silence, because this was a story that needed to get out, that this support was needed. So why don't you tell us briefly, and I know you've got to run because you're still serving and protecting the streets of Chicago as a police officer, but tell us about your autism journey if you can.
Well, a lot of our stories are similar, and, you know, mine is a little different. It's a little different, but Daniel was born the same day I got hired by the police department. And at that time, I thought my life was set. I was living a dream. And I was also coaching high school football. So I was doing the police officer, which I still do at night, and coaching high school football during the daytime. It was just two lifelong passions. I was pursuing them. And before Daniel was born, I had the pretty I was married. My wife was Burl Ross Randall. And she was a cheerleader. And she went to Poplar High School, one of the most popular public schools, Lynn Bloom, you know. And I was the football player at one of the most popular Catholic schools. Of course, we attended school together, Mendel Catholic. And, we had a baby girl. And then Daniel came along. I thought my life was set, you know. And I was enjoying loving my life. And I was in love with who I was, maybe a little bit too much. So I just thought I had it all. And then when Daniel was around, too. I mean, when he was born, like I said, all men like that little image of them. Daniel was a strapping young man. He was like about 10 pounds, huge chest when he was born. I thought it was, you know, greatest thing I ever seen. Like, he was big and strapping, and he was developing rather normal at the normal pace. And then we noticed some things around the age of two, where he was withdrawing. He had the rigid style of play, lining up the toys, and he wasn't speaking. He just started to withdraw. And we had the diagnosis done. And me, being an alpha male, when they told me that, well, your son has autism, I looked at him and, like, you know, fix it. You know, and in my mind, if there's a problem, fix it. So I looked at him dead in their eyes and said, well, y'all got to fix this. They were like, you just can't fix autism. I said, no. Oh, yes, you can. You got to do something because this is a problem, right? Well, it's got to be fixed. So that was my man. You know, being a police officer and a football coach, hey, that's my mindset. Alpha male, hey, look, fix it, and then we're going to keep moving forward. Thank you. Goodbye. I'm out of here. You know, but still, it was that denial. And I was wondering, a lot of men, why did I have a child with autism? Why me? Why me? And if you think about it, no one here, neither one of us, chose to have a child with autism. We didn't choose it. And we didn't know. We wasn't even forewarned. So evidently, we were chosen for this task. Like our pastor said in church, whatever the task you have in front of you, you was anointed for that. That was it. You know, you was anointed for that. And a lot of us say, well, if I could do this all over again, maybe I wouldn't have married her and had this child. But that wasn't our choice to make. You know, that's God's doing. That wasn't our choice to make. So we were chosen for that. And that is why when we met in the parking lot, I decided to tell my story through the book you helped me co-write, Father's Guide. Embrace it and enjoy it. The special needs child, a father's guide to embracing and enjoying the special needs child. But then that's when I got the challenge. That's when I decided, hey, the purpose of these children, when they come here, they change us. I'm sure everybody can attest to that. They make you stronger. They make you more sensitive. They make you more passionate. They make you a better dad. They make you a better overall person. And they change you. And like in the Bible, once a man is converted, it's his obligation to strengthen his brother. So that's why I decided to write the book.
And, I love
since
it.
Since then, Daniel, yeah. So and
I
now
it.
It's,
I know,
it's,
I know, you, I know you. I know you. I know you got to run, but hopefully you can just hang out with us for a little bit, a little more. Danny Randall definitely is one of the five inspirations that we have on the call right now. Again, you guys, you're watching and listening to the Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Lefteridge, where we are talking to the dynamic autism dads. Real talk about autism from a dad's point of view. We are hoping that we have Joe Jackson on the call. He's another one of the dynamic autism dads. Joe, if you can hear us and you're on the call, I have a number of the last four digits of 1152 from the 773 area code. If that's you, Joe, I need you to hit the number one on your phone, and then I'll see it in the queue, and then we'll bring you in. I want to make sure that we're only talking to the dads for the first part of the show, and then if we have some other people who want to join and give comments, we'll have them call, we'll let them into the show. But Joe, if you are on and your last four digits are 1152, I need you to press the number one on your phone, and I'll see that you're in the queue. So what I want to do, let's go back around, and I want to start with one of the questions that we asked on Saturday at the CAC Spring Fling, where we really kicked off Autism Awareness Month. And, you know, one of the statistics says that that one in 88 children in the United States are diagnosed with the autism spectrum disorder. And there are different levels of that autism spectrum. So if it's too much to say, then I understand it, but we want to really have dads be transparent tonight. So if you can tell us, each one of you, where your child was on the spectrum and where they are now on the spectrum, that would be a great help to our audience. And what's your understanding of the whole definition of autism spectrum disorder? So, Danny, we'll start with you, and then we'll go back around to Paul and work our way around to the others.
Hello?
So, Danny, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so where is Daniel on the autism spectrum disorder, and what do you understand it to be, that whole spectrum?
Well, autism is a communicative and social delay disorder. The communicative disorder. And he was diagnosed with mild to moderate autism. And he goes through stages, his peaks and his valleys when it comes to autism. But right now he's still be moderate autism, and still everything's still in work in progress. We're still working with him. There's no such thing as false hope. And I know he can he can get better. I pray every day that he reaches his full potential, whatever that may be.
Okay. All right, Paul, are you back on with us?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I am.
Okay. So why don't you, from your understanding, what is the autism spectrum disorder definition? And then where does Shakir, where does he stand as far as the spectrum is concerned?
Okay, well, the key word in the autism spectrum disorder is spectrum. That's the complete name for the disorder, autism spectrum disorder, oftentimes clipped as ASP. Shakir would be described as moderate on the spectrum. He will always have some degree of dependence. He will never be in a situation where he will be able to live on his own. Now, people need to understand that autism is not a disease. It is a disorder. Specifically, it is a developmental neurological disorder of the brain. Being developmental, it usually shows itself around the age of 2 years old or so, although it may not be diagnosed until later because the signs may not be as evident to those parents and other people around the child.
Hey, Paul, before you go forward, you made a great point there, and I don't want to skirt by. Do you find in your day-to-day living that people tend to get those two words confused, disease and disorder, when they're speaking about autism?
Some of them do. I wouldn't say it's a major problem, but there still are individuals around the day that kind of think that it's something that you catch, which is not the case.
Something that's contagious,
and the reason is there's much more awareness of autism than there was back in 1995 when Shakir was diagnosed. When he was diagnosed, when people thought about autism, they thought of the movie Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman. And,
right.
The feeling was that anyone with autism was a genius in one specific area, which is, of course, completely false. Now, as Danny was saying, autism presents itself in three ways. There's an impairment in social interaction, and when Shakir was younger, as is the case now, you can look at him and tell that he would like to engage with others, but he just does not understand just how the process works. So oftentimes you will see him on the fringes looking on. So that's the social interaction part of autism. And then there's the communication, not only verbal communication, but nonverbal communication. Oftentimes when people think about problems in communication, they think about the ability to talk. But it's also the ability to give cues and to receive and understand cues that are nonverbal, such as an expression that a person is making with the face that might indicate happiness or sadness or frustration. Well, oftentimes individuals with autism have problems reading these social cues to communication. And the third way that autism presents itself is repetitive and stereotype behaviors. One of the things that Shakir does often, he has to, whether it's going downstairs to the kitchen or walking in a door, he has to repeat the same process over and over again the same way. When he is walking, if he's going around you, he has to go around you on one particular side. If you happen to make it difficult for him and he goes around the opposite side, he will retrace his steps and do that all over again.
Wow.
And then, of course, there are stereotypical behaviors that individuals with autism have. People call them routines, but it is so ingrained in many of them that it's more like a ritual. Once again, using my friend Shakir as an example, when he makes his bed, and he loves making his bed, he spends maybe 30 minutes making his bed because he has to have it done a particular way. Okay, so that explains basically what autism is. Now to the question of where Shakir is in terms of where he is at 24 years old, as I explained, he will always have some level of dependence. He will never be able to live on his own. His verbal skills are very low. He can understand what people tell him to do. He can follow instructions, 2-3-part instructions, but he rarely initiates any type of conversation. And he does have the characteristic of echolalia, which is repetition of sounds or language that is directed toward you. For example, if someone says, "Hello, Shakir," Shakir's response is going to be, "Hello, Shakir." So that's where he is in terms of communication. And
okay.
I've already explained some of the repetitive and stereotypical behaviors that he engages in. So that's where Shakir is, basically.
Well, thank you for that detailed explanation. I just got a text from Joe. He's having some plumbing issues, so he may not make it into the call. But it's important for us to shout out Joe today because we understand that 4 out of 5 children that are diagnosed with autism are boys, which is presented on the call. But Joe Jackson, he's the 1 out of 5. He's the one who is raising a 12-year-old daughter. And so he deals with autism from a different perspective. And so we're gonna hope that some of the other guys on the call tonight can maybe speak to that other side in his behalf, since he's not going to be able to. Okay, so Joe is saying that he is on. So let me see if he is in the queue. Okay, I see him. All right, so we're going to bring Joe Jackson into the call. Joe.
Hey.
Joe Jackson.
Hey, how you doing?
The call.
Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you? Good.
All I'm right, doing some work. Man,
gonna
I'm
have
good.
To...
How you doing?
I hear you. So let's have the other guy mute yourself for a second so that we can hear Joe, because we got some feedback going on. So, Joe Jackson,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your situation as far as this autism journey has been.
Yes, my daughter Jasmine is 14. She was born in 2002, and, you know, the first couple years, you know, everything, you know, she was a quiet baby for the first 6 months, didn't think nothing of it. And then as a couple of years went about, she was atypical. I mean, she did the alphabet, the numbers, and everything without any issues whatsoever. And then one day the daycare person pulled us to the side and said that Jasmine may have some issues and that she trusts us, that she can approach us, that she was concerned about some of her responses. So we had her tested and then found out that she was, I guess, PDS, maybe Paul can verify that, before you're autistic. And, you know, we went through the other steps. First, I was in denial. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about, so I was just like, she's fine. Because she used to knock on my bathroom door when I was taking showers and do dances and play with me. So she was always talkative, always dancing, always singing. And then as she got tested and things were happening, you know, we started noticing some things wasn't, you know, very unusual, not looking me in the eye, starting to be lonely to herself. We had her tested around 4 or 5, and said what it was said. She has autism. And then me and my wife had to sit there, you cried it out, and then we said we got to make some things happen. So we did our due diligence to investigate as well as join a support group like the Chicago and Autism Support Group in 2007. To see that we're not the only ones out there. And as far as a girl, you know, I probably, you know, my daughter's unique. Her behavior is her issue right now. Maybe we get beyond the behavior, she can do more things. That's because we had a couple of times at other schools' systems. At first it was good. We had the right personnel. Then as the personnel transferred over and new people came behind, we had issues dealing with Jazz. But Jazz had a behavior issue that we finally kind of conquered. So we really don't know her potential. She's very smart. With just her behavior issues, but she still has autism. So we have her on med. We have her doing ABA therapy. We're involved with what she does. She's 14 now. You know, sometimes you think about your dream, can you walk her down the aisle? Or will she ever drive a car? Or will she have a boyfriend I can, you know, harass, you know, like a father should do, you know, all the time? I don't know if that's going to happen. All I can do is there are possibilities. I'm not going to limit them because her possibilities might take a little while longer. So, you know, You sit back, you see other people have, the gentleman have five, I mean, boys, I have a girl. you know, you sit there, and from my point of view, it's a little bit different, but it's still the same as far as what you experience about what you can and what you can't have. And all you can do is just be strong and pray, and then you put yourself around the right people to keep it moving, man. So that's what I do with my daughter. Try to do the best thing I can with her. Try to have a socialization with her. Again, her thing is more of a behavior issue. It's about trying to get out of things and manipulate, but she's very smart. And that's what we're trying to just knock on the door. If we can conquer that, she, you know, we can take her to the next level. But as far as emotional, you know, yeah, I cried. Sometimes I stand in the stars, what could have been? I have a typical daughter who's 18. So, but I do see the interaction. I see the love between each other. And, you know, that's all I can hope for is that, you know, we continue to give her love, do my due diligence to give her a chance to do now while I'm here on Earth, and give my due diligence so that she can move on when I'm off, when I move on from the Earth, and, you know, with my soul to go to spirit to heaven, hopefully. So that's why I'm at as far as with my daughter. You know, like I said, I love her very much. You know, everybody has their dreams, but then you have a new reality. I have a new reality of my daughter, and I cherish every moment. That's all I can do is take it one day at a time.
I hear you. Well, and I thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Glad you were able to get in, Joe Jackson, so that we can hear a father's love for their child, their daughter that is working through autism disorders. So this is what I want to do, because we've got five guys on the call and everybody can't talk at the same time. So what I'm going to ask, what I'm going to do is I'm going to direct some questions to certain people. And Danny, I know you've got to leave. So we'll start. We'll give you the last word for yourself. Tell us one thing that you want fathers dealing with autism to know, Danny, and then we'll let you go serve and protect.
Repeat the question one more time.
What's one message that you want to give to fathers? We talked a lot about them suffering in silence. So what's one thing you want to let them know before you go? Because we know you have to leave.
Well, stay around a little bit. But I would tell you this. There is no such thing as false hope. And when these children, you can't equate this disorder with a lack of intelligence. Because these children are highly intelligent. I know Daniel is highly intelligent. And a lot of times when you're dealing with a child like Daniel, you got three little boys in one. You got a regular little boy, you know, a regular, he'd be a mischievous 16-year-old. And you have one with a disability. It's a known documented disability. And in some areas, you have an exceptional child. And you just got to hope and pray and stay with them and that they reach their potential as fit. And but one thing, like I said, other than remember there's no such thing as false hope. You were anointed for this. I mean, everybody was chosen. We were the chosen one. So if you're the chosen one, you know, sky's the limit. You just got to stay in the fight, stay there, you know, stay the course. And that's what a lot of dads, unfortunately, a lot of men, they leave. They can't handle it. But what you fail to realize is God cannot help you if you're not brave. You got to stay in there. And that's what seems to be the similarity between, you know, with the gentleman that I'm hearing. I'm hearing the same, you know, we stayed the course. We're still in there. And that's where the blessings come in, because these guys, unfortunately, some men, they leave. But when you leave, you can't get the blessings. You can't get the blessings. They need to remember that. You cannot get it when you leave.
All right. Thank you, Danny. We're going to let I'm going to bring Carrie and Carlos back into the conversation. And I just want to touch upon what Danny said of being brave and staying in the fight. So, Carrie, Carlos, whoever wants to go first, why don't you share from your personal standpoint why you stayed? What made you stay when you got this diagnosis of autism in your child?
Well, it's Carlos. I start. Well, it wasn't a any type of choice. Me and my wife have been together since 87, like high school. We met in high school, and so I went to a different school. I went to CVS. She went to Hyde Park. And we kind of grew up together in some degree. And then, so these are our first children. We got married in 98. And then had our first son, Jalen, in 05, and our second son, Jair, in 06. So Stan was about our love for our child, you know, and what we was having. I think a lot of fathers who may leave, maybe they just wasn't married. And if they did leave down the line of their marriage, because maybe it was strained on relationship, on how one may parent, and or the difference of parenting, I think could happen in that degree. But it wasn't a choice of me staying or not. It was just that's my child, and I birthed this child. It was given to me and my wife. I mean, you do go through the part. Was this something in you know, we always kind of blame medicine. You know, I do kind of think about that. I know that's my own conspiracy theory on that. With all these shots they want to give you and stuff. Could we look at our second son? We didn't do that. No shots, and you know he's fine. But like I was saying, that just could be my own conspiracy theory on that aspect. But I enjoy my son, and I learned a lot from my son, and I learned a lot through my wife about my son as well, because it's like I said, it's two different relationships, being a male and a mom, because a mom is gonna be a mom, and like Danny say, you know, sometimes like it should be fixed, and we understand that this is nothing you can fix. This is something you grow into, and it fixes
right.
you, and
right.
so that's my take on it, you know.
I love how you said it's something that you grow into, as well as it's something that you grow through as a family. So thank you for sticking in the game. You know, there's a study that was done in 2010 that said 23.5% of married couples who have children with the autism spectrum disorder ended up in divorce. But Carrie, you're not one of those couples, Carrie. So you tell us from your perspective, what is it? Why did you stick and stay in this fight? And what advice would you want to give to fathers about sticking and staying instead of running away?
Well, you know, just to clarify, Terrence, that our relationship it did suffer, but whether my son is in Mississippi or Atlanta, Georgia, I'm always going to be his father. And being a part of his life, that's been one of the most important things of my life. It was very important to me to have this relationship with him so he would know that, listen, no matter where you are, I always love you. So very early on, we developed a special relationship. When I would come home, he was ready to see Dad. He had been with his mom all day. They were frustrated from each other. So he wanted to spend time with me, and I want to, I mean, it's true.
Okay.
And she needed the break. You know, regardless of how our relationship was, we shared the responsibility of loving our son. And I would like to say that the reason my whole thing is to always, no matter where you are, is to be a parent and to be part of your children's life, is that's what my mother did. So this came from way before I had my son. This is what my mother instilled in me. You always have to do the right thing, no matter how tough it is. And sometimes it's going to be very tough, but you always have to do the right thing. So my son and I, we developed a special program where I wanted to help him reach his full potential. And along the way, he helped me to become a better human being, to become a better parent, to become a better father. So we educated each other. And I tell anyone, it wasn't easy. Our son was severe, diagnosed on the spectrum, very severe. He was bouncing off the wall, a lot of temper tantrum, a lot of stimming, a lot of meltdown. You know, you name it, we went through it. And also, at the same, very little sleep. So imagine trying to You have to be to work at 7 in the morning, and your son just fell asleep at 5 o'clock. Now you got to get up and get ready to go to work. And when you come home, you're going to go back through the same thing again. But it wasn't that he was trying to do this. We had to educate ourselves on what is it that we need to do. And we worked together. And that's what I encourage people to do. No matter what your relationship is like, put the child's interest first. Work together to educate yourself and to help your child reach their full potential. And our son started severe. Today, he's a sophomore. He's an honor student. We're prepping him for college. He's part of several programs where he's been on, you know, airplanes and taking trips and flown to with a chaperone. So he's very, very high functioning, very high functioning now. And he can go on to whatever he decides to do, he would do it. So the same thing that we did for him, that's why I want to share my story to help other people to know, like, listen, yeah, this is not a life sentence. These kids are very, very intelligent. And the thing that makes you stay is you see is that what you give, you get back. The love of it. The love of it. That's what makes you stay.
I love it. You guys, we're listening to the Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Lefters, and we've got the dynamic autism dads on the call. We've got Carlos Payne, we've got Joe Jackson, we've got Kerry Brooks, we've got Paul Butler, and we've got Danny Randall. So we are having a great real talk conversation from dads talking about autism during Autism Awareness Month. That voice that you don't normally hear. I talked at the beginning of the show about you usually hear about autism from a woman's voice, and we're so glad to be offering the other side this Tuesday night. It's still time for you to get in on the conversation. If you want to give a comment, ask a question, or just give a congratulations to these dynamic autism dads, then all you got to do is call us at 323-870-3764. We're going to check the queue. Hit the number 1 on your phone if you want to leave a comment. So that's 323-870-3764. Hit the number 1 on your touchtone phone, and we'll see you in the queue, and we'll get you into the program. Shout out to those who's watching us on Facebook Live as well. Tavia Free Spirit, one of the sponsors of the Unstoppable Stories Show. Bling 10 Personal Assistance, thank you for watching on Facebook Live. Kimberly Johnson Evans, current president of CAC, thank you for watching on Facebook Live. And she posted a question that we're gonna save that for the last question of the evening. I think that's a very pointed question, and we'll ask it to the entire panel at the end. Thank you to Juanita Scott. Thank you to Maureen Victory is Mine Bobo watching. And back at the media, your voice. Thank you guys for watching. We thank you guys, because this is definitely a show that we want to put awareness out there from a dad's point of view about autism and more advocacy out there. So again, if you are on the or if you are listening in on Blog Talk Radio, go ahead and press that number 1 on your touchtone phone, and then we'll get your comment or your question in. But I want to open the line back up now to Paul, as well as to Joe Jackson, because you guys are really working hard with CAC, the Chicagoland Autism Connection. And you talked Saturday about how you wanted to bring you one of the initiatives of CAC was to bring more men into the fold, to make them feel comfortable coming to these monthly meetings, where it was predominantly women that were at these meetings. So Paul or Joe, whoever wants to go first, tell us, why was that so important to really open it up to the men's initiative?
Okay, I'll start out, and Joe, you can follow me. A slight correction, first of all, Terrence. Low stature grade, 1 out of 88 individuals will be diagnosed with autism. That was from the year 2012. Current statistics are 1 out of 68. I just wanted to make that clear. And at
this point,
the estimate used to be 4 out of 5 are male. Now it's closer to 5 out of 6. So that itself, to me, is an indication that we need to have more fathers involved, because we know with typical males, as they approach adolescence, to a great degree, they begin to kind of feel that in order to show my maleness, I can't have a female telling me what to do. And so that's where fathers come in to kind of let them know that that's not how you show your maleness. That's not how you do it.
Yeah.
And with 5 out of 6 individuals with autism being male, they need some male influences around. They need the fathers. I personally just got tired of seeing women being out front, being the warriors without assistance from their partners. I saw too many cases where the mothers were telling me that the fathers were either physically absent or emotionally absent. Let me tell you, I'm together with my wife, and my older 3 sons have been out of the house for a long, long time, in the 40s. So we only have 1 child. And with the 2 of us, it's still a handful, you know, dealing with our son. It's still very difficult. So I can imagine how difficult it must be for a single mother to handle a son with autism, or a daughter with autism, for that matter, and other children, be they typical or special. And so with that in mind, Joe and I, you know, got together and had a couple of meetings with some fathers and just kind of encouraged them, because fathers are not the type that want to go to meetings for, you know, 2-3 hours at a time. You know,
right.
Unless it's associated with maybe a sporting event. Now, they'll go over and they'll meet and look at a game or something for 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
And in terms of coming to a meeting. So we wanted them to feel a little more comfortable. So what we do now is, when we do get a father or an uncle or a grandfather to come out, we kind of, you know, away from the general meeting itself, try to talk to that individual to kind of encourage them, exchange phone numbers, and let them know that, hey, you know, we're here for you. It's almost like a male caucus within Chicagoland Autism Connection.
Okay.
But to explain how I first got involved with CAC, the reason why Shakir has been able to make so many progress over these 24 years is that along the way, there have been individuals that we have met that have been extremely helpful to us. When Shakir was 4 years old, almost 5, we went to a meeting for this fledgling organization called the Chicago Southside Autism Support Group. It's now known as Chicagoland Autism Connection. And at that particular meeting, there were only about... well, actually, when my wife and I walked into that meeting, we doubled the size because there were 2 there, and then we made 4.
Okay.
And from that meeting in 1997, it has grown to where it is today, where we have hundreds of members. They opened up my eyes because I didn't know anything about autism, although I had gone to school, received a master's degree in special education, but doing those 12 courses that I took, there was only about 1 paragraph on autism. So back in those days, autism was a mystery. And that's why the symbol for autism are a series of disconnected puzzle pieces because it's a mystery. And so it helped me and my wife so much during the journey that I felt that once things stabilized, I had a duty to pay it forward. And so I'm still involved with the organization now because I feel that I can be of great assistance to families of younger children who come in with very, very little help, wondering what the heck am I going to do. And my wife and I just explained to him about our son. When our son was younger, you know, he had these temper tantrums. He could not sit still in a meeting. But now he sits in meetings and people compliment us on how well-behaved he is. We've had subscriptions to the opera and to the jazz concerts for about the last 5 years. And he just loves it. No disruptions whatsoever. He's my running buddy. I take him wherever I want to go. And the reason I was able to do this is because an organization such as Chicagoland Autism Connection is there to provide information and techniques that allow my wife and I to learn how to deal with that. And that's why I continue to advocate at this particular time. Moms have been the advocates for so long. It's time for some, as I call, dadvocates. That's what I am, a dadvocate.
I love it. And you know what? I am here to testify to what you just said about Shakir. I got a chance to meet him on Saturday. Very strapping, handsome young man, and very polite and very cordial. Had a great, great spirit. So you and your wife have done a great job with Shakir. And as we transition to Joe, you know, with organizations like this, CAC and the other organizations that came to your Spring Fling event on Saturday, why do you think it is that men continue to suffer in silence when it comes to talking about autism and raising their children?
Well, you know, I think you have to look at it as simplistic on a foundation level of just of a father's dreams have vanished away. And some of them, once they receive the news that their son may be different or not, what we call typical, that they take it so hard, or it just kills their dreams of what they thought was their dreams to come true, is a different dream for them, maybe a nightmare, and then therefore they're not as involved. And I think sometimes that's mainly the purpose, is they just realize, or they're in super denial, that they just ignore all the ultimate evidence, that they just don't even really pay attention and just kind of just fade to black. I think that's like one of the major bugaboos that's going on with that aspect. Even when the fathers come in with the moms to our event, to our monthly meetings, most of the mothers are the ones who come in. They come in probably most likely by themselves, the initial meeting. Sometimes the father accompanies, and we've done a better job of retaining some of the fathers to keep them more involved. But historically, you know, once they come, they kind of fade, and then the moms just kind of stand out. Again, same situation about the father handling the actual reality of what their son's capabilities or his certain situations. And I think that's one thing we have to understand, that we have to help out moms to understand their loved ones or spouse or boyfriends, you know, why they're not participating. It's just that you got to drill down and get down to the fundamental. You got to reach them and say, are you hurt? What are you seeing? And you have to talk to them because they're really in denial, or they're just plain hurt and just don't know what to do. And, you know, you see their boys and some of their friends, and their boys are playing, and they can't have their son play. So, you know, it hits them all at once. They can't brag. My son playing football is such a football. At least they initially, because they don't understand, you can still have this kid achieve. You just got to have a different type of normalcy. So I just think that as far as that concerned, when I came into CAC, you know, I saw Paul. I don't get an organization just to get in it. So I saw what he was doing. Hey, I'm running too. So I'm a father. You know what, I see all these women in here, but you know what, I'm still a parent of Jazz and Jack, so I'm going to be just participating just as much. That's just the way I think. But I do see that when you spend time amongst, even out in the public, you do see a more of a the tendency that it is a female leading a kid. And I just think that's just, regardless of race or class, it's just that's just the nature of the business as far as that, because, again, because like 5 out of 6, as Paul stated, that's a reality that that father has to take, and it hits him in the face and unfortunately doesn't take it so well, or the depth of his hurt that sometimes we forget we need to reach him at that basic level to bring him up so that he can move on and help his kid.
I love it. You guys, you're listening and you're watching on Facebook Live, The Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Lefteridge, and we are talking to the dynamic autism dads, or as Paul said, we're talking to dadvocates of autism on The Unstoppable Story Show tonight. Definitely, I got about 25 minutes left on the show, so if you want to make a comment or ask a question, now's the time. Come on, 323-870-3764. Dial, hit 1 on your touchtone phone. We want to get you into the conversation. This is your opportunity, whether you are a dad that's dealing with this for the first time, or whether you are a mom that was trying to get ideals on how to get the dad involved in this whole thing. Here's the opportunity to have some real talk with some dynamic autism dads. I'm going to open up the line to all of the dads right now, and we're going to pose the question that Kimberly Johnson Evans put into the Facebook chat room. Again, thanks to Kimberly for being a part of the Facebook broadcast right now. But the question was, what questions or concerns do you have in regards to your child's future? And we're going to start with Danny again because I know his time is limited. Danny, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay. So the question is, what questions or concerns do you have about Daniel's future as he is right now?
Well, the concerns I have is he likes to engage. I heard one of the dads say our sons like to engage, but they don't know how to go about it. And with his physical size, he can be somewhat startling. I have concerns for his safety. He likes to approach people, and a lot of times it's not in an atypical manner. And, of course, like any dad, you're going to fear for your son's safety. That's one of the things. But I want to interject this. When we were talking about the dads who can endure this, but one thing, Terry was saying, he watched his mom do the right thing, and that's why he stayed. See, I watched my dad do the wrong thing. That's why I stayed, because look,
yeah.
You need to realize, my father, he was a great dad, but by the time I got into the eighth grade, he decided he wanted to run the streets, and he left. And within a year's time, he went from being somebody I idolized, this tall, muscular, handsome guy, to being homeless. And that just stuck with me forever. I mean, I saw how he suffered. And when men refuse to involve themselves, stop their responsibility to their child, ain't nothing, you can't get blessed that way. And I saw how he just crumbled right before me. And that's one of the reasons I don't leave. And another thing, people fail to realize, when I'm with Daniel, and you involve that, people will show you favor. They'll show you favor. There's been times when I'm with Daniel, he's had sort of mini episode or whatever, strangers many times will come and assist because they're fond of you. You've shown favor. And a lot of dads don't realize that. Stay with your child. Take your child out into the community, and it makes a world of a difference, and you will see favor.
I love it. I want to switch right over to Carrie, because Carrie and Danny have something in common. They're both in law enforcement, and Carrie, you started an organization called Autism to Awesome. So I'm wondering if you have concerns, because you both have boys, and you both have teenage boys, and you both have teenage African-American boys, but you also have teenage African-American boys who are dealing with autism that the community really doesn't know that they have that until it may be too late in some instances in engaging with them. So, Carrie, do you, what's your concern, you know, from a law enforcement standpoint, in what may happen when your son is out there in the community?
Well, Terrence, first of all, I'm definitely always concerned with safety, and really not just for my own son, but for all the kids that are out there on the spectrum, and in particular the one of color.
Yes.
That's why one of the things that we do at our organization is we initiate training for law enforcement on identifying the traits and characteristics of someone that's on the spectrum and how law enforcement and first responders can go about de-escalating the situation. It's a very real issue. It's one that is definitely dear to my heart because I do have 25 years of law enforcement experience behind me. I am a father, and this is something that I made my mission to go out and initiate and do. We also look at it from the other standpoint as well, getting the fathers, the mothers, and the community involved as to if you have a child that's on the spectrum, introduce them to law enforcement. Go to the police station, go to the firefighter house, and let them understand what law enforcement is supposed to be doing, what firefighters are to do, and introduce them to people that are there. Do an outreach. This can be initiated by anyone in the community. In certain cities, you can have your house flagged with the first responders. You can give them your address, your child name, the age of your child, and the disability that they have. So if ever there's an issue at your house and they have to come to your house, it should already pop up in the computer. This is not every city, but it's growing in a lot of different cities. So parents can be proactive as well. And also, one of the things that's big in the autism community, a lot of our kids, they do wander away from their safe haven, whether it's from school, whether it's from home, whether it's from a daycare. So the parents can be proactive by having an intervention program. What are they going to do? What are some of the favorite places if your kid wander away? Where do they like to go? And we also know through history and research that our kids like to wander towards water, and many of them sometimes end up drowning. So you have to understand where you live, where they go to school, is there water near if your kids should wander away. So I have concerns about my kids regarding safety, and we're always talking about safety, how he can, as he goes into adulthood, how can he de-escalate situations, understanding his surroundings. But this is my concern for a lot of people in America, especially the ones on the spectrum, and especially the young men of color. That's hit home to me. Those are my concerns.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think that's, you know, concerns for every family, whether you're dealing with children with special needs or whether you're just dealing with children that society considers typical or, you know, I hate to use this word, normal. But that is a concern for a lot of families, especially in the climate that we live in today. Carlos, let's switch over to you. What questions or concerns do you have about your son, you being a dad of one of the younger children on this panel?
I think, like everybody said, I think it's always going to be the number one thing is safety. And if you look at how society looks now with all our killings in Chicago and just innocent bystanders getting killed, and our young youth out here. And my son is not, he's verbal but won't communicate with people. You know, I fear that being taken advantage of, you know, being bullied is the number one thing. I know one time, I think in the third grade, since my son wasn't as verbal, and some boy wrote some bad on a piece of paper and said my son did it. But I had to go up to the school and argue with the school about it and say, well, how can my son, how you think my son would say something like this when you see the writing? They say he wrote it. And think about it, me and my wife teach my son to say shut up is like bad words, so he don't say the word. So when my son must get mad at the boy who did it, I guess he told him to shut up and he says a bad word. So the person asked my son about it, about the writing. Did he comment on the with the young boy? And did he say something bad? He said, yeah, but he was saying shut up was bad. So they didn't really verbalize with him. And I just felt, you know, that when you don't really understand someone, they could be taken advantage of or push blame on them because they're not going to say nothing. They're nonverbal. Oh, you know how they are, you know, that type of stereo. So that's my number one thing. Something happened and my son don't react or you know how they say somebody grab you, you scream so everybody know you're around. I just think somebody could take my son and just walk up with him and I don't really think he'll fight him. You know, so that's why we pick our kids up, take them to school, bring them back. They don't go nowhere without us. We have a net family. A real net village. They only go with certain people we know. And I think it's because our environment, our society, and I just fear our society. I think it's just not safe out there, even for regular kids, you know, let's say normal kids out here. So that's my thing. It's about safety, you know, for my son. And that's my number one thing, our family, is to keep both our boys safe.
Wow. Love it. Thank you so much. Joe Jackson, you've got the 14-year-old princess.
Mm-hmm.
Puberty, yeah. Womanhood,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
All those things that it is just, again, in typical households with their daughter going into teenage life, this, you know, makes most dads lose their hair anyway. But now this mm-hmm. added level dealing with the autism spectrum disorder. What's your mm-hmm. biggest question or your biggest concern as far as Jasmine is concerned?
Well, my main thing is her behavior. She can get her behavior in control. Sky's the limit. It's just something that she had to adapt to due to certain failures at certain schools or to just administration. I mean, when you get a teacher or the staff that's not concerned about your kid, you got to step behind. You got to work against that. And that's how she adapted, by just acting out. So we're blessed where we're at right now. So as far as Jasmine, she's going through puberty. You know, the front part is growing out. You know, she's a young lady. You know, sometimes I have to make sure she keeps her pants up because the boys love. But, you know, at the same time, she is becoming more aware of herself around the opposite sex. Not that she don't do anything, but she is becoming aware. She shows that she can, if she wants to, she's interested in a boy, she will show she has interest. I think my main thing about that, I'm not as worried. I'm going to be a concern with her, but she has a radar as far as she interacts with people. And I know the way she acts around a person knows something may have happened. But we are at that point now, we have to think about maybe we have to have cameras, even though we have people with arrest to come by, because she is in puberty. And you do have to worry about her as far as her her body position is about position with another person, space, boundaries, to be aware of that, of how you hug or how you do so forth. But she seems to have that by herself anyway. As far as, you got to just make sure you know your people. I mean, you know, even the people who molest or do something are people love and know. So you have to filter and still be aware. You know, you have to just put it on to an extra level. You trust people, but you still have to take the extra steps just in case. You just don't know, you know. When you have somebody innocent like that and they may have let their guard down just because that's how they are, you know, more lovingly, then, you know, you just have to take precautions to be aware. You know, you have to, even Jasmine, I talk to her, hey, I'm not sure. Your boyfriend, I'm your daddy. I make sure she understands our boundaries. And in a way,
right
now, I have to respect. She's already showing me that she's a girl by how she kind of settled, pushes me away. Okay, you're not comfortable. I appreciate that. She's become a young lady. She's beginning to understand the concept of boundaries. So that's the start, like I said. So, I mean, you know, other than that, it's always safety. You know, you're never safe on the streets. We all know that. So you have to, you know, I'm getting older. You know, a lot of people have to watch her. You know, that's the ultimate in the future. But we try to take it one day by day and keep it positive and try to build up, like I said, while I'm on earth and to make sure when I'm gone, she got something to keep it moving in life.
I love it. And Paul, bringing up the rear, your 24-year-old son, what questions or concerns do you have about him as a young adult living in the society that we live in today?
Okay, Terrence, before I answer that question, let me help you out a little bit more. You and some of the listeners out there may not be that school in autism. I noticed that you were kind of reticent about using the words normal versus not normal, and that's for good reason. We like to use the words typical as opposed to normal, because when you say a person is not normal, that denotes a negative connotation.
Yeah.
But if you say the person is not typical, that could be a great thing. You know, Einstein is not typical, right? You know?
Absolutely.
So a person with autism is considered neurologically atypical, and a person without autism, what you refer to as normal, we call that person neurotypical. But back to your question, as a 24-year-old, my wife and I are extremely concerned with Shakir's safety. That's the number one issue, and that's the issue that's probably keeping Shakir from making some advancements and improvements in other areas. We would love for him to participate on an everyday basis, specifically job-wise, with neurotypical peers. However, the problem is he, because of his limitations in social interactions, he could be easily taken advantage of, and they were, and as I said before, there are safety concerns. So he's not able to do some of the things that we would want him to do. The last time we looked, humans don't live forever. And so we're very concerned about what will happen when my wife and I are no longer here. I'm a senior citizen. My wife will be approaching senior citizenship in not too long. So what's going to happen to Shakir? Now, we've
right.
taken some steps in that regard because we have a special needs trust, which all special needs parents should have for their children so that economically he would be taken care of. Also, we have in place in the special needs trust list of the people who would take over as guardians for him if, you know, we weren't fortunate enough to leave this earth. However, those persons, of course, most likely will be gone before Shakir is gone. So what's going to happen to him? No one loves your child, we know, as much as you do. So you wonder, will those people who will care for him when we're gone, care for him the way we would like for him to be cared for. So that's what we worry about. As long as he's with us, we know that he's going to be safe because we're going to ensure that. If anyone ever did anything to Shakir, I tell you right now, my wife would track them down and something would happen. And I will be visiting her in one of these federal prisons. No
wow.
doubt about that. You know.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So that's the answer, our answer to that question.
And you know what? Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the education. Thank you for the correction. Because you know, as I tell everybody, and some, I'm sure there are people that are going to be watching or listening to this show in the replay mode, as on Facebook Live as well as on Blog Talk Radio. We don't know about the correct jargon. We don't know the difference between typical and atypical versus normal. So you guys are giving us this needed education to really be able to communicate in a proper way. So thank you for that. And thank you for those tidbits about, yes.
Let me just say that I'm glad you said that, because that's one of the reasons why I encourage our families to get their children out into the community. Because, number one, you know, we need our individuals with special needs. We need for them to learn how to react to things in the general community.
Yeah.
But even as important as that, just as important as that, is the fact that we need people in the general public to learn about our children. Because I say to know them is to love them. And
exactly.
There are a lot of misconceptions about individuals with autism, but unless these people in the general public see them in action, those misconceptions will remain. So get them out into the community.
I love it. I love it. Okay, we're gonna do a real quick question, and then we're gonna round it out with you guys giving your final thoughts. So the quick question is 30 seconds or less. We just talked about what your concerns or questions were for your child. Let's talk about what's your dream. You know, again, thank you for the word atypical versus typical. Typical households have dreams for their children. What are your dreams for your children as they grow into adulthood and beyond? Let's start. Let's again go back with Danny. Danny, are you still with us, or did you have to leave?
No, I'm still here. Still here. I'm okay. Laying down, so getting my rest.
What? 30 seconds or less. What's your dream for Daniel?
That he reaches his potential as God see fit. You know, I love him. That's my child, and regardless of his full potential, he's a talented young man, and his potential is God see fit.
Love it, love it. Carlos, what's your dream?
I think my dream is for my son just to be as productive as Danny says, as God would allow. You know, with the assistance of myself and family, my wife, and CAC. I think as long as we keep ourselves wrapped around these children, they'll be productive in their own reality. Something good. That's my dream.
I love it. And Carrie, what's your dream for your child?
My dream is really quite simple, for my son to be happy. I think that everyone on the face of the earth, it would be beautiful if everyone could experience love. I know that my son has experienced love. He knows that his parents love him. He knows that his cousins and everybody else love him. So my dream is for him to just move forward in life and to be happy. If he's happy, he would do fine.
Wow. Thank you. I love it. Just simple. Be happy. Joe, what's your dream for your princess?
Right now. Man, this plumbing ain't no joke. But anyway, as far as my daughter, you know, I'm trying to do two things at once, man. I want to help y'all out, help everybody participate. So I'm thankful for taking this. And just want to say I appreciate your job, bro. This ain't no joke tonight. But I'm doing two things at once. But as far as my daughter's concerned, you know, as my man said, happy, safe, you know. But the thing I want to make sure is that I do all I can while I'm on this earth to ensure that she be the best person, have the best opportunity when I'm long gone. That's whether estate planning, that's whether educational, that's whether housing, a job, whatever. Set her up with the proper network. And even though that can be challenging, do all I can do so that when I move on, my girl's going to have the best life that she can have. That's what I want for my daughter.
All right. Thank you. And, Paul, we'll give you the last word. What's your dream for Shakir as he thinks to grow?
Well, like Carrie and Joe and the other two gentlemen, I just want Shakir to be happy. Now, right now, that's very simple for Shakir. Shakir just wants his coffee when he gets home from his day program in the afternoon. He likes to take long hot showers, you know, that kind of cools him out. And in the evening time, after he's worked with his individual aide, he wants to watch his sports, you know. And the thing about Shakir, when he watches his sports, no matter what the score is, the home team is always winning. So that's what I wish for Shakir. And the only way for that to happen is for my wife and I to continually introduce Shakir to others out in the general public so they can change the way they think about autism. Because if our loved ones with autism are to live in a society that works for them, then they're going to have to change the minds of those that are making the policy. And when these young people see our young people with autism and see that they're just like them, then they would make sure that the governmental policies are such that allow them to live that happy life that Joe and Carrie, myself, and the other two gentlemen were talking about. So let me just say that, once again, to all of you out there, all your families with individuals with autism, make sure they get out to the community. Take the opportunity to tell people what autism is. Go around with a chip on your shoulder and dare people to say something to you about your child, because that gives you the opening to educate them about autism.
And I thank you guys. I thank you. We're going to give you, Paul, the last word with that. Thank you, Paul Butler, Danny Randall, Joe Jackson, Carrie Brooks, and Carlos Payne. Thank you all, you dynamic autism dads, for being a part of the Unstoppable Story Show and sharing real talk from a dad's point of view. You guys, I want you to have a blessed week. I want you guys to continue to thrive. I wish nothing but happiness for you and your families throughout the rest of this year. Thank you so much. Oh, someone just asked a question. Where can they make a donation? So, I don't know, Joe, Paul, which one,
yeah.
who wants to handle that one?
Donation to CAC.
Where can they make a donation?
They can make a donation by going to the web page or the website, and the HTTP is basically www.chicagoautism.org. www.chicagoautism.org, and they will see membership, and they'll see a button for donation as well.
I'd also like to plug in April 28th. At the Grand Ballroom on 64th. You can see it on the CAC website as well, that we're a Grand Lodge, New Jerusalem Grand Lodge, and Queen Esther Grand Chapters hosting a fundraiser for CAC for Autism STEP. So hopefully it can come out and support that event that will help provide the needs and support for families dealing with autism through CAC.
All right. And so we're going to ask Kimberly Johnson Evans to put that in the chat room, if she don't mind. And Carrie, go ahead and give us information about Autism to Awesome. How can they get information about what you're doing as well?
Well, yeah, they can go to our website at www.autism2awesome.com. And our main focus is helping people work through the crisis that they're going through, and also to educate families how they can help their children reach their full potential. Any first responder organizations that need training on how to engage people on the spectrum, that's our go-to program. So, yeah, www.autism2awesome.com. Thank you.
All right. And if you guys want to get a copy of Danny Randall's book, Thoroughly Immersed, The Father's Guide to Not Only Enjoying but Embracing Your Special Needs Child, you can go to Amazon.com and look up Daniel Randall on Autism on Amazon.com to get the copy of the book, Thoroughly Immersed. Thank you, gentlemen. It's been a great, great show. Hopefully you guys can come back and listen in next week, because we're going to have the magnificent autism moms talking about autism next week from a woman's point of view. So thank you guys for being a part of
thank
the conversation
thank you.
This evening. All right.
Thank you, Terrence, for having this program.
You are so very welcome.
You.
Well, that's it. Everybody, we had the privilege of being joined and entertained by the dynamic autism dads. They gave us a wealth of information. I know you guys got a chance to really hear some great information and hear it from a man's point of view. And I hope you will share this information with other men out there, not just dads with dealing with autism or dads dealing with special needs kids, but all fathers need to no longer suffer in silence. They need to know that there is support for whatever is happening in their relationship with their children. And it starts with conversations like this. So I'm Terrence, the Unstoppable Coach Lefferidge, the host of Unstoppable Stories with Terrence Lefferidge, where we talk to ordinary people with unstoppable stories. See you here next week, where we talk to the magnificent autism moms. We'll get the other side of autism from the female point of view. But as always, I want you to dream big, aim high, and believe in the impossible. And never, ever, ever forget that despite the obstacles, despite the diagnosis, you too can be unstoppable. Don't just make it a great week, make it an unstoppable week. Take care, family.